Person, the claims of primogeniture and merit were fortunately united. His swarthy complexion, harsh features, and diminutive stature had suggested the ironical surname of Carlo Johannes, or John the Handsome, which his grateful subjects more seriously applied to the beauties of his mind. His reign was never disturbed by conspiracy or rebellion. Feared by his nobles, beloved by his people, John was never reduced to the painful necessity of punishing or even of pardoning his personal enemies. During his government of 25 years, the penalty of death was abolished in the Roman Empire, a law of mercy most delightful to the humane theorist, but of which the practice in a large and vicious community is seldom consistent with a public safety. Severe to himself, indulgent to others, chaste, frugal, abstemious, the philosophic Marcus would not have disdained the artless virtues of his successor, derived from his heart and not borrowed from the schools. He despised and moderated the stately magnificence of the Byzantine court, so oppressive to the people, so contemptible to the eye of reason. And as such a prince, innocence had nothing to fear, and merit had everything to hope. And without assuming the tyrannic office of a censor, he introduced a gradual, though visible, reformation in the public and private manners of Constantinople. The only defect of this accomplished character was the frailty of noble minds, the love of arms and military glory. Yet the frequent expeditions of John the Handsome may be justified, at least in their principle, by the necessity of repelling the Turks from the Hellespont and the Bosphorus. He hunted the wild boar in the valley of Anazarbus, and had fixed his javelin in the body of the furious animal. But in the struggle a poisoned arrow dropped from his quiver, and a slight wound in his hand, which produced a mortification, was fatal to the best and greatest of the Comnenian princes.
Following John II, his son Manuel I reigned for 37 years, years that were, as Gibbon says, filled by a perpetual though various warfare against the Turks, the Christians, and the hordes of the wilderness beyond the Danube. And the Byzantine monarchy for a while became an object of respect or terror to the powers of Asia and Europe.
Manuel possessed the iron temper of a soldier, which cannot easily be paralleled, except in the lives of Richard I of England and of Charles XII of Sweden. Such was his strength and exercise in arms that Raymond, surnamed the Hercules of Antioch, was incapable of wielding the lance and buckler of the Greek emperor. In a famous tournament, he entered the lists on a fiery courser and overturned in his first career two of the stoutest of the Italian knights. The first in the charge, the last in the retreat, his friends and his enemies alike trembled, the former for his safety and the latter for their own. After posting an ambuscade in a wood, he rode forwards in search of some perilous adventure, accompanied only by his brother and the faithful Aksach, who refused to desert their sovereign. 18 horsemen, after a short combat, fled before them. But the numbers of the enemy increased. The march of the reinforcement was tardy and fearful, and Manuel, without receiving a wound, cut his way through a squadron of 500 Turks. In one day he is said to have slain above 40 of the barbarians with his own hand. He returned to the camp, dragging along 4 Turkish prisoners, whom he had tied to the rings of his saddle. He was ever the foremost to provoke or to accept a single combat, and the gigantic champions who encountered his arm were transpierced by the lance or cut asunder by the sword of the invincible Manuel. The story of his exploits, which appear as a model or a copy of the romances of chivalry, may induce a reasonable suspicion of the veracity of the Greeks. I will not, to vindicate their credit, endanger my own. Yet I may observe that, in the long series of their annals, Manuel is the only prince who has been the subject of similar exaggeration. But the most singular feature in the character of Manuel is the contrast and vicissitude of labour and sloth, of hardiness and effeminacy. In war he seemed ignorant of peace, in peace he appeared incapable of war. In the field he slept in the sun or in the snow, tired in the longest marches the strength of his men and horses, and shared with a smile the abstinence or diet of the camp.